Welcome to Indiana Sports Beat Radio.
So for the thousands in attendance and the millions watching around the world, it's time!
Three on the way. Oh, Elian! Elian! And Indiana wins the ball game.
Know your role and shut your mouth. You jabroni.
Float game for the win.
Gone. Goodbye. Touchdown, Indy. Woo! IU. America. They got a football team now.
It's pretty simple. I win. Google me.
You know that I'm the cream of the crop.
Oh. Now, here's Jim Coyle.
Happy Monday! Welcome aboard, everybody. Glad to be here on this Monday. Glad to have you along for the ride. And I hope you had a great weekend and get you started back off in the right direction. As it's a full one this week, man. No short weeks, no holiday weekends. So we've got to put the full 5 days in. Hope you had a great one this past weekend, though. Got to chill out, relax. Beautiful weather. Plenty going on, whether watching sports on TV, the IndyCar race up in Detroit, the Detroit Grand Prix. We'll get you up to date on that. NASCAR, of course, was on the racing last night, or last night, really, as well. Kyle Whittingham, Michigan's coach, took the ride in the fast seat up in Detroit over the weekend. So they bumped into college coaches over the last couple of weekends in a row. Alex Palou with another win. But let's see, College World Series sneaking up on upon us. The Softball World Series is underway. The NBA Finals are set, and Indiana lands another big fish on the recruiting pond, and plenty of other things to go get into today. Looking forward to it. Greg Rakestraw will join us as well a little later, as will Dustin DePirik. Most importantly, each and every one of you, glad to have you along as well. How was your weekend? How did you spend it? I was taking in the sports that were making themselves available. Plenty of races to watch. I watched a lot of the IndyCar, the qualifications, and all of that leading up to the Detroit Grand Prix. Which very different race after being at Indianapolis the week before. And of course, all that Indy brings. And then you go to Detroit, which is big time Chevrolet. That's their race. And wasn't Chevy's weekend, as Honda would finish 1, 2, and 3 on the podium at the Detroit Grand Prix, with Alex Palou taking first, Kyle Kirkwood taking second. And boy, you're going to make me forget who took third. Daggone it. I don't know why I'm forgetting that at the moment, but I am. Somebody will pop it up there for me in a second. But fun race to watch. Different, very different after having Indy. Man, where it's all about speed and just laying full out, where the Detroit Grand Prix course kind of tight, very different, and came down to, once again, strategy and being on the right side of a caution flag at the right time. I don't want that alarm that keeps going off. Got to get that shut down. But yeah, of course, that's a lot how sports are, baby. You got to be at the right time on the right side of things. Otherwise, it just doesn't always go your way. It did for the Yankees as they clobbered the Athletics 13-8 with all 13 runs coming in one inning. The Reds, I know they've been taking on the Atlanta Braves over the last several games. Where are my Reds now? Yeah, boom, back in last place, still with a winning record. It's amazing. This Central Division, still all five teams with winning records. It's mind-boggling. It really is. No other division is close to having that. I mean, and I've got to be honest with you, I don't remember in my, I don't want to say lifetime, but I don't remember a time this deep in the 60 games in to the season. I mean, it's not, what did we, a third, at least a third? It's a little more than a third, right? But to be that far into the season and for all five teams in a division to have a winning record, kind of mind-boggling. As a matter of fact, the last place Reds are six games back of first place. That's it. Kind of crazy. I look around the league, the Los Angeles Angels in the American League West, they're last place there, but only eight games back. That's the only other team that would be close, but they are substantially underwater at 23-37. Of course, they're very fortunate to play in a division that's the winner is the leader, rather, 31-29 right now. So Robert says it's new basketball team season now. He's fired up. He's ready. Of course, he always is. Appreciate you, sir. Carolina Hurricanes back in the Stanley Cup Finals. Last time was 2006. Got all kinds of stuff going on right now. Christopher, keeping up with us, keeping us up on the Stanley Cup. Yeah, and then we've got, let's see, the, what am I thinking of? You know, that World Cup soccer thing. USA, Team USA, nice win. It was a friendly, but over Senegal. So that's, I think they're a top 15 team. So that's something positive for Team USA, Robert adds, and football too. Yeah, football's going to come around a little sooner than the old round ball will. So we'll be hitting that up. But I mentioned earlier another big recruiting weekend for Indiana as they land another key piece to their squad as they land yet another top recruit. This one, they from the 2027 class. Let's see, make sure we get over to that. Yeah, new safety. And that's in addition to their Miles Smith, the four-star edge that Indiana added. But Brady Scott is the latest piece that the Hoosiers have landed. Let's see here. Indiana landed once again a sizable piece for their recruiting. The scouting report, he's a versatile safety prospect with a high floor and encouraging potential for the next level. He's got good size for the position, 6 feet, and is filled out his frame nicely. So the fit at Indiana, he's a defensive back prospect that quickly became a top priority in the 2027 recruiting cycle for this recruiting staff. His size, versatility, and natural athleticism offer both a high floor and a high ceiling at the collegiate level. So we'll talk more about that as the week goes on. But Indiana football and Kurt Cignetti and crew continuing to add the pieces that they need and looking forward to seeing how those continue to pair out for the Hoosiers. But as we thought that it would, with success comes success. So, and that is exactly what is happening on the football side of things for Indiana football right now as they continue to fill out this roster of the future, and things will continue to go. That's what winning does. It brings you success. Ogene Anunoby will carry the IU banner playing for the Knicks in the NBA Finals this week, Fred points out. Yep. How about the Knicks back in the NBA playoffs? Good to see some new blood of sorts in there. And I promise you, how proud is Tom Crean of OG and all he's got going. So you know that he's looking forward to that. And so I'm sure a lot of other IU fans are watching. How hard is it if you're not a Knicks fan, but how does that go for fans? You know, you've got OG Anunoby playing on that team. So do you all pull for the Knicks? Do you still pull against the Knicks? I mean, what is deeper in your fandom, I guess, is what is the biggest part of that, what drives that. But I'm going to guess more people are college fans and their college fandom bleeds over than they are deeper into being a pro fan, per se. Golf over the weekend, of course. There was all kinds of things going on. See, NASCAR, Denny Hamlin, he won. Where were they? Let's see. There's just too many things in the brain. I remember watching that race. Oh, it took so long to get started because of rain. Yeah, that was delayed for quite some time and ended at like 12:30 last night, I think. Something like that. Crazy. Yeah, good thing that the IndyCar, they were early in the day. I mean, like 12 hours earlier. But this upcoming weekend, they'll be in St. Louis, and that is a late prime time race from the TWW Raceway in St. Louis on Sunday, I think 8 p.m. Central Time, maybe? Holy cow, it's a late one, but we shall certainly see. Up next, we'll take a quick break. I believe our good friend Greg Rakestraw will join us. We've got plenty more coming. We're back with it right after these messages. Welcome back, Indiana Sports Beat Radio on this Monday. Glad to be here with you, and more importantly, glad to have you along for the ride. The Big 12 is becoming the first Power Four conference to have each of its members sign participation agreements with the College Sports Commission. You remember we've talked about this. This is the group that decides whether or not NIL deals pass mustard, so to speak, and hasn't gone well for Nebraska yet so far, but we'll see how this continues. But the Big 12 wants rules and enforcement. And we want to be a leader in that area, Commissioner Brett Yorkman said Friday, since we can't lead in anything else. No, just kidding. I said that Friday after the league wrapped up 4 days of annual meetings. I think signing the participation agreement certainly is indicative of that. Going to be interesting to see how does that work with Texas Tech. I mean, they are one of the biggest spenders now. As a matter of fact, they have a softball player that is the only softball player, I believe, seven figures softball player. I'm not knocking softball. Loved playing it when I was younger. I don't know how there can be in any way, how can the value for softball reach seven figures? How can that be looked upon as, yeah, that's normal. That's right. Because there's nothing in return. How are you getting anything in return for that? I'm not, I'm just really wondering here. How does that pass mustard? I think it's, you get into some other things, and then people are like the fact that it's a female sport, and nobody is going to want to touch that to say, oh no, we can't have that, because then it would be Well, why not? Again, it's not about, this is not a male-female thing. If women's basketball was driving things like men's basketball does, that would be the sport that would be the second highest revenue generator. It's not. But if it were, we would be talking about it as if it were. But it's not. Neither is, how the hell are is it viewed in any way possible that this is considered normal under the rules set up by this. That's why it takes people that are high above me on the pay scale, baby, because that does not make sense to me. But what does sense got to do with it, right? It's all about the dollar, baby. The Big 12 wants rules and enforcement, as I said. That agreement requires schools to waive their rights to file a lawsuit against the enforcement agency and gives it wide latitude to sanction programs for violating rules that outline how players can be paid after the House settlement last year. But all 68 Power Four schools must sign this 11-page document for it to become valid. All schools had initially been asked to review and sign the document by last December. Well, we know how that usually comes and goes, but all 68, I can't speak for the other conferences. I mean, obviously, they all say they want rules and enforcement, but they haven't signed the participation agreement, Yorkman said. Well, I think it's a little bit deeper than that, and he knows that. And the Big 12 has little to bargain with. They don't have the top teams. And they have some in certain, in basketball. But so they're trying to do what they can do. And standing on this rock is one of them. Yorkman said the league expected to have all the signatures by early next week. Richard Linton, the president of Kansas State, said the Big 12 board of directors, composed of the presidents and chancellors from the league's 16 schools, unanimously agreed to sign the document. It outlines the rules that have been established since that House settlement was approved last summer. For instance, about the salary cap and the CSC's role in analyzing third-party name, image, and likeness deals through its NIL Go platform. I know that even though we keep hearing this stuff over and over and over, it's hard to figure out what's what, even for us that cover it every day. But the CSC says it has cleared more than 26,000 NIL deals with worth some $242.3 million through May 1st since its launch. Yorkman said he was on a call earlier Friday with the CSC and other conference commissioners. Like any startup, and the CSC is a startup, not even 12 months old, you have to think about what's working and what's not, what are necessary adjustments, both short terms and long term, that we should be considering, Yorkman went on to say. And we're going to dive into that a little more in the coming weeks to determine what that might look like. But I'm bullish on the direction of the CSC, Yorkman said. So how does that go? We'll see. The Big 12, you know, last week it was go ahead and break off if you want to do and you want to and see how that works out for you, which is dumb. Nobody is going to do that. Nobody wants to see that. It's talking about the SEC's, you know, people, whoever spouted off about that. Which, man, y'all just get along. I'm just kidding. But seriously, I keep saying there has to be a starting point, and I still don't know. Have we ever reached the starting point? It just continues to run in circles, it seems like. But who knows? Eventually, at some point, there has to be a resolution to this stuff. You heard Coach Kurt Cignetti, when we spoke with him last week at Huber's, talk about this not being a sustainable method. But also included in that has to be coaches' salaries. Is that sustainable? I mean, you can't say one is without the other, and you can't, everything has to be included in that, I think. If players' salaries are not sustainable, why are coaches thought to be sustainable? And I'm not talking about anything specific. I'm just saying as a piece, it has to all be brought together. It has to all work together. It has to work for one and all, especially now when players have the ability to move about. Players have the ability to call their own shots, so to speak. Then you've got the other issues of their representation, how much these people are getting. Are they driving players to move on to a new school each year because they can get a bigger, better deal, which means they get a piece. They get a piece of each bigger, better deal. So there's just so many facets to it and so many pieces in the pie, I guess, and everybody wants their piece. So don't know how that's going to finalize itself. And we keep talking in circles, like I said, but we continue to move forward because the world doesn't stop moving. The season keeps getting closer to us. And whether it's the football season and we're talking about the playoffs, because it's going to keep coming. You know, we're in June now. Happy June. June 1st. Next month, Big Ten football media days, SEC media days. And guess what? Right after that, boom, here comes the season. And then that December 1st deadline to determine the next round is going to be here. And you know, last year it got right up to it, then we had to extend it. And so I see that happening again. I think that there's not going to be an agreement until there has to be one. And part of that is a deadline, the deadline coming up. Even with that, I don't know what that's going to do. Is that going to push the SEC into agreement with this 24 team potential playoff, which I think that now that they have been presented some information that actually shows would have had more teams in from a percentage standpoint with a 24 team playoff than they would with a 12 or a 16. So I think eventually, I keep saying it, that's where it's going to go. The Big Ten is not going to relent because the biggest reason for that is to get somebody besides ESPN hosting some of these games. And I think that is an absolute must, especially when that one network. See, we don't have this in pro sports. Whether it was CBS, let's say CBS had the NFL playoffs, which is not the case, but if they did, they're not promoting one team over another from one division or one conference because they don't care. They just want good games. Not what the ESPN wants, though. They want the teams from their conferences that they already promote. SEC number one. That's what they want. They want SEC teams in. Or maybe a Big 12 or an ACC, but not Big 10. They want their people in, man. And they promote it as such. And teams don't get in by being voted in pros. That's where ESPN has a big stake in that. The pros doesn't have that. It's professional. They do it by winning. College football is kind of backwards with, you know, the conference championships being such a huge game. And then you go into the playoffs. So, Greg Straw, how are you, my man?
I'm good, buddy. How are you?
I can't complain. If I was any better, I would be you. How was your weekend?
Weekend was something. So Friday night filled in for Bob Lovell for Indiana Sports Talk, as I do a couple of times each summer as he gets a hiatus. Saturday morning and early afternoon was doing the semifinals for the IHSAA Boys Volleyball State Championship. Saturday night was the Indy 11 game, as Indy has now won an eighth out of nine league home matches and vaulted themselves into second place in the USL Championship. Sunday morning was one of the cooler things I get to do every year. It's called beat ball. It's baseball for the blind and visually impaired, and best team in the world happens to be based in Indianapolis, and they host a tournament every year, and they have us come out and do a couple of games, and I'll do the world championship for that coming up in early August up in Naperville, Illinois. And then yesterday afternoon was the first of four doubleheaders that we'll produce on ISC for Indiana All-Star Week. It was the Indiana Juniors versus the Kentucky Juniors. This just in, Jason Gardner is really good at 30 against Kentucky.
I've heard of him.
Yeah, he's decent. He can play. And wrist is fully healed after his injury from the basketball season. So I had a talk show, and I had six games of play-by-play in four different sports. Just an average weekend for me.
Just a typical rake straw weekend, baby. Just a typical rake. Why don't you get a job? Why don't you do something?
I got enough jobs. I think I'm good on that front. Oh, and I'll do a doubleheader tonight. I'll do a golf event tomorrow and a doubleheader on Wednesday. And then after that, this light that is behind me, and I'll move my camera here in a second, is not the oncoming train. There actually, it does start to slow down for me, finally, a little bit as we get into the first couple of days of June.
And I'm sure that you are looking forward to that. I spent my weekend watching a lot of IndyCar, a lot of practice. There was qualifications going on up in Detroit, a big change from after coming from Indy with the super, I guess you'd call it a super speedway. I mean, what else do you call Indianapolis? Just Indianapolis. But to go up to not only a road course, but a street course, and I mean, is Detroit unique from other street courses? Because I was trying to think how, man, I described it once as being tight, like at times in a walk-in closet tight.
Fist fight in a phone booth. How about that?
There you go.
Describe the activity in Detroit. And obviously the visuals are stunning for that. The party atmosphere is great. And the thing that Detroit has going for it, obviously you've got the Renaissance Center. That's the huge building that you see when you have the shot of the flag man above the start finish line. That's the Ren Center in downtown Detroit that is framed in that shot. But it's almost kind of like the same look you would have, like the look that Camden Yards kind of ushered in, you know, the warehouse behind right field. Well, you've got fans having porch parties, basically having, you know, garage parties, you know, overlooking the course and watching it that way. So there's been this great history of auto racing in Detroit. I mean, it's the Motor City, kind of makes sense, right? But F1 raced there kind of on a downtown circuit years ago. Like I remember, and this is when Danny Sullivan, before he won the 585, actually ran a little bit in F1 in the early 80s. They had this issue, and you may have seen some of this yesterday. They had to make sure they were welding the manhole cover shut, because the suction from those cars all of a sudden, and that could be a serious problem. Yeah. for somebody. They then went to Belle Isle, which again is more of a traditional road course, but still pretty compact and pretty tight. For the event's sake, they kind of went back down because, again, when you have a street course event, you are selling a party and there happens to be a race that is run around it. That's really what you're doing, okay? The road course is more of the traditional racing and is kind of the more pastoral, camping, festival of speed type of thing. When you're throwing a street course, you're throwing a party. And oh, by the way, there's a race that goes right through the middle of the party. And then the oval tracks are what they are. Hey, come see racing. Come see fast cars. Come see them going nose to nose in a corner. Those are and that's what makes IndyCar unique, is that they sell three different types of races. F1 sells one, maybe two now, as they've adopted some more events. You know, obviously Monaco has obviously been that way. Las Vegas is kind of that way. You know, NASCAR sells a couple. They've embraced road course racing much more than they used to. Obviously had the street event in Chicago the last couple of years. Heck, they're going to Coronado Naval Base and doing an event coming up in a couple of weeks. But that is what IndyCar is doing. So, yes, it is a stark contrast when you go from Indianapolis to Detroit. Jim, kind of the other topic to bring up from an IndyCar perspective is, and we probably have this conversation every year, and it is the, you know, for the sake of the crews and drivers, should there be a week off after Indianapolis? And everybody logically understands that, but you're also trying to make sure, hey, you just had an average of 6.6 million people, you know, watching you in the 500. You've got to be able to kind of carry that momentum over and give them a show, which is what this weekend was. And frankly, Jim, to be honest with you, because you had no NHL playoff games this weekend, you had one NBA playoff game this weekend, you would have been abdicating the throne if you had not. And let's also acknowledge what IndyCar has going for it right now is availability. Okay. Races are on Fox. Right now, you have to watch NASCAR races on Amazon Prime. It's that chunk of the season.
And let me tell you, that's not an easy chore.
Right, correct. And
I have Prime.
You are the and good on both IndyCar and the NHRA to go, oh, here's the Amazon Prime week. Hey, let's put both of our events on Fox. Obviously, Fox television partner, both Fox pays and makes that decision. But in other words, this is me saying, I understand how tired the drivers are. I understand how tired the crew guys are. You're not getting the week off after the Indy 500. Sorry, that's not the way this works. And for as much as I have empathy for guys and the effort, trust me, I feel the same way. After the month of May in Indianapolis, I get it. I was there for 15 hours on race day. I opened at 4:45 and left at 7:45 p.m. I wasn't changing tires, but I get it. I understand. My counter would be you also get 5 months of an off season. Your season goes from basically March 1st through September the 1st. You get to sleep in September here, you know, and because of the World Cup, you're going to get some extra breaks later in the year. So anyway, those are the two overarching thoughts I've got about this weekend in Detroit and yesterday's race.
Speaking of tire changer, Ryan Campbell is a tire changer. I was blown away when I saw this yesterday. I'm like, wait, what?
There's two ways. So what Jim's alluding to is for Dale Coyne Racing. And again, clearly Jim is a smitten kitten. He has been hit by the IndyCar bug. He has now enveloped the series. And we welcome all into the tent. There's no nouveau riche or anything like that. Welcome aboard, Google Gobble. Jim, you're now one of us in terms of loving IndyCar. But what he is saying is that Ryan Campbell, who is the PR director for Dale Coyne Racing,
PR
is also
people.
The right rear tire changer.
He interviews people.
Right, for one of the crews. And the reason Jim knows this is that Kevin Lee picked out Ryan to be his crew member spotlight on the Fox broadcast this weekend. And Ryan even goes, Kevin, I know you hate me because I can't give updates during the race because I'm kind of busy changing a tire. There is a cool aspect of it. There's also the aspect of it's why Dale's cars are towards the back of the field. Dale is the smallest budget operation. And frankly, he's been doing this for 25, 30 years. I have a lot of respect for somebody that has figured out a way without having as much money as others to kind of keep this going. But at some point in time, there also is, all right, here's where the budget is set and you have to reach there. and you probably shouldn't have your PR director be the guy that's also on the tire crew as well. So it's cool for Ryan to be able to do that. Probably not, again, it explains why their cars are usually closer to 24th and 25th than first and second, unfortunately.
Yeah, very, very cool. And but I agree with that. But you know what? That gives him a great story. Then I also learned about Mick Schumacher, that he still is, or a reiner, horse riding, horse reining. The ranch that his dad had, I was like, wait, what?
Right. You know,
living down in Texas. I cannot wait to talk to him at the track or somewhere for a second about that. But that blew my mind.
For Mick, I'm curious as to how long he's willing to kind of go through the pain of learning this series. And again, the ultimate example of this is Jimmy Johnson. And again, Jimmy didn't run IndyCar until his 40s. All right. But you don't get past many fingers before you start talking about the accomplishments of Jimmy Johnson as a NASCAR Cup Series driver, and came to our series and looked slow. Now, let's be honest. Okay, you and I have struck up a relationship with Al Unser Jr. The same thing happened when he went to stock car racing. And very much the same thing happened to Dario Franchitti. It makes what Juan Montoya was able to do, running successfully in kart and winning two Indy 500s and running in Formula One and running in NASCAR and being competitive, not a top 10 guy, but being competitive, makes it all that more impressive. Because you think the world's getting smaller, but in different disciplines, it is seemingly all the more difficult. And let's go to Kyle Larson, okay? 2 years ago, he was competitive in the 500. Last year, he was an absolute non-factor. Was, you know, couldn't have been more middle of the pack if you tried last year. It is next to impossible to switch disciplines. Now, Mick Schumacher has come from an F1 background, and so they're more related than, say, stock car to IndyCar, but there is so much that is different from a technology standpoint here, terminology standpoint here. And so I think everybody here understands, listen, your first year, your goal is to finish the race, all right? We understand you're going to be 23rd, 24th, 25th in points. So I'm very curious as to how he defines this a successful season, and is he willing to go one more year and kind of see how this goes? And then the question for Rahal Letterman-Lanigan is Mick bring enough money, or is his name enough to bring money? Like, you see a pretty large company in worth is on his side pods for the 500. Is that team better off having Mick, where you know he's not going to be overly competitive, but he brings you a lot of attention to the team? Or are you better, frankly, having a ride buyer? And that's who they had last year in Devlin DeFrancesco. And again, I'll introduce you to terminology, Jim. Back in the day, it was Marco Greco, and the joke was Marco Greco wrote a big checko, all right? God bless Robin Miller. That's his line. I want to make sure I give our dear departed friend the full credit there. But that's a ride buyer, and that is a guy that has a guaranteed check for you to fund a team. Kiffin Simpson is that way with that third Ganassi car. And so that's the debate and discussion that I think Rahal Letterman-Lanigan has in the offseason. Does Mick want to stick with this? Are we getting the attention that we want out of Mick being here? And then for Mick, hey, this is kind of like being in a back-end Formula One ride where you know you're not competing for wins. Do you want to go through that one more year? I hope that's the case, because I think we'll see growth from him if that happens.
Yeah, it's definitely the changeover, but it's great to hear those names. I'm not going to lie to you.
Right. And
speaking of names, if you watch the IndyCar NXT Next Series,
yes,
this weekend, you would have heard another familiar name in Enzo Fittipaldi.
Correct. So that is Emerson's what grandson. Yep, correct. And there have been obviously numerous different Fittipaldis that have ran. Christian has been the most successful of that group, who again ran in the Champ Car Series. That was kind of during the IndyCar Champ Car split. Christian briefly had time in stock car racing where he wasn't as successful. Enzo's a little bit older, and by no, I think 23, 24. So by no means old in terms of race car driving. Like, Schumacher's new to the series. He's 27, 28. A lot of the guys that are running Indy Next are kind of 19, 20, 21, 22. that have worked their way through the feeder system of the IndyCar ladder. And again, what's unique about Indy Next this year is that there is often a driver or two that are very dominant. And Dennis Hauger is running for coin this year, one of the three full-time rookies in the series. He was a guy that, again, had kind of gone the F1 ladder route, got to a point where he had stopped, came over here, basically couldn't find a full-time seat last year in the IndyCar series, went to Indy Next and thumped everybody. And he's being placed in the coin seat this year because I think Andretti will probably put him in Marcus Ericsson's seat next year. So it's kind of like a soccer term. He's on loan, basically. They're giving him a seat at coin to get him seat time, likely for a higher-end ride this coming year. We don't have a guy like that this year in the next. It's been very balanced so far this year. And obviously a guy like a Schumacher, a guy like a Fittipaldi, because of that instant name recognition, it makes it easy for you to find sponsors. So we'll see if yesterday was a breakthrough moment for him.
And not only that, it's a great way to continue to build the IndyCar brand, which most people say, well, you don't need to build it. It's not so much building, it's still continue to grow it. You mentioned a minute ago the 6+ million viewers from the Indy 500, and actually that should be more, to be honest with you, but I think that it will continue to grow as IndyCar continues to stay on the pace that it's on. It's like it's found its groove under Roger Penske, so to speak.
And there's two ways to look at that, Jim. You know, the number was down about 6% from 2025. And the numbers of the other races have been a little more up than down. It's kind of alternated almost. To me, the story was is that the Indy 500 viewership was within a million of the Daytona 500. And again, some people, I think, have the wrong perspective when they go, well, Indy's a greater race than Daytona. Well, I'm not here to debate that. But they are clearly the two most important North American motorsports events, okay? The Daytona 500 and the Indy 500. And they're, frankly, on the same broadcast network, so it's easier to have a comparison. And the fact that Indy's within a million of that, when I think everybody agrees, NASCAR has a higher Q rating and has for a generation than, say, IndyCar racing. The fact that the 500 was within a million viewers of Daytona, to me, that is a very positive sign, exceedingly positive sign. So now the age-old question for IndyCar is how do you take the momentum that you have from your peak race every year in the 500? How do you carry that over during the course of the season? And I will say this, and I don't have the NBA Finals, nor do I have the NHL Stanley Cup Final schedule in front of me. But I know that this weekend, the Bomarito race, the St. Louis race, which has kind of become the best oval event other than the Indy 500 on the schedule, I think that's a 9 o'clock race on Sunday night. That may sound bad. No, that's good. This is a primetime window on Fox where you can showcase some of your most exciting product. I hope we're looking at a really good rating for IndyCar coming up on a Sunday night race this weekend on the outskirts of St. Louis. And the good news is for the majority of your listeners or viewers for this program, that's a 3-hour drive on the east side of St. Louis. You know, go 70, hang a left on 55. You see the arch, you look right, there's the racetrack right there, north and east of Mississippi River. So if you're like, hey, I want to go give this a try, this is the perfect weekend to drive outside of Indianapolis and go watch some IndyCar racing.
Well, not only that, it's so accessible from southern Indiana, or straight out 64, like you mentioned. Right. Even from Nashville, Tennessee, boom, it's right. I mean, it's a great race because it's, again, Indy is going to provide complete three Indy 500 streets of Detroit. Now you're going to the Bomarito, which is a unique egg-shaped oval course. And you're going to have, normally, Joseph Newgarden would probably be favored, but I don't know if he will with his foot injury that he's dealing with.
Well, the way I would phrase it is this: because it's an oval, Alex Palou isn't as favored, and that's the good news for everybody else. And there are a couple of other drivers, Really, there are three. One of them is now an arriver. You expect him to be competitive every week, and that is Malukas. But over the last few years, there have been maybe some unlikely sources of guys you're like, oh, that guy's pretty good on an oval. Santino Ferrucci has become a really good oval driver, as evidenced by always finishing top 10 in the 500. Even in lesser equipment, David Malukas, really good on an oval. The other guy who has had a miserable year and finished dead last yesterday is Christian Rasmussen. That dude's Danish, and he has taken to ovals, and the ECR guys know ovals well. So, you know, it's funny, in NASCAR, when you go to a street or road circuit, you're kind of opening the field for some people. In IndyCar, when you go to an oval, that you kind of open up the field for some guys that are mid to back of the pack that can get the job done.
Yeah, Shane Van Gisbergen had come over from
New Zealand. And he's become so dominant on road courses, it's almost reversed that trend in NASCAR. You're right.
And he's starting to learn the ovals. I forget where he finished last night, but anyway, he's getting better and better. But all the way around, auto racing is just becoming more fun to me in general because these two disciplines seem to be welcoming each other in a lot of different ways. They have and are showing that respect for each other as drivers, and there's more communication back and forth between them, and I think fans enjoy that.
Well, again, and in terms of what it means for the fans, I think it comes down to obviously television partners. And so you saw the event in Phoenix where IndyCar ran on a Saturday and NASCAR ran on a Sunday. Obviously, we did that here when it was a road course event and we could run IndyCar on a Saturday and NASCAR on a Sunday. That is when both were covered by NBC. That is obviously not the case now. And so if you want to see more partnership, look for that in March, April, and maybe early May when both series are covered by Fox.
Early May, ooh, we know.
Yeah, because of the month of May, I'm not sure that has an effect here. I'm curious, though, if maybe going forward there is an event kind of the weekend before Mother's Day that IndyCar and NASCAR work together on that front. I think
that would be something. And looking up, like you said, mentioned the Bomarito 500 coming up this weekend in St. Louis as
IndyCar. Prepare yourself for a giant fireball. For those who aren't familiar with that event, they basically forget fireworks. They set off these huge cannons along the backstretch. So be prepared for a sonic boom. I don't want your pacemaker to be affected. So just know that's coming at the start of the race on Sunday night.
Anybody, again, going to be able to catch Pelot for the series?
The points championship? No. I mean, the good news is Kirkwood finished second yesterday. So it kind of, I'm not a getting bored with Pelot person. I'm mesmerized by what he has done.
To be honest, I mean, it could have gone a different way yesterday.
Sure. Yeah,
it
was not a dominant race for Pelot yesterday. No. But Kirkwood is the guy that has the best chance for sure, and he's about 50 points back with half a season left to go.
What's up next for you, brother?
All right. So tonight, the futures games. These are the top freshmen and sophomores in the state of Indiana. That's at New Pal, 6 o'clock for the girls. Boys game to follow. Tomorrow, my one day as a golf announcer all year, the Dye Junior at Crooked Stick, the top juniors in the country that come in. They almost kind of play like a tour, frankly, at this point. This is one of the tour stops. They're playing 36 today, 18 tomorrow. We're streaming action from the 18th hole tomorrow so from the side of the 1991 PGA Championship. I'll go on the air about 9:30 or 10 o'clock for that. Then more doubleheader action on Wednesday. That is the junior-senior all-star game. So the Indiana seniors make their debut for the week. They'll play three times in 4 days. They'll play the Indiana juniors. I think the boys' game is going to be really good. I think those two teams are pretty even, at least kind of the top-end talent in the state of Indiana. 6 o'clock on Wednesday night. Would love to see you at New Pal in Mount Vernon Monday and Wednesday. If not, we've got you covered on the ISC Sports Network. We will not go to Kentucky on Friday night. We will have the games from Gainbridge on Saturday night. So the girls at 5, the boys at 7:30 against Kentucky to wrap up the week on Saturday evening.
Make sure you're staying in tune with the Greg Rankstraw and everything that he's got, which a little bit of everything. I'll be in St. Louis this weekend, my friend.
Well, have fun in St. Louis, buddy. I'm sure we'll talk about it all next week.
I'm sure we'll talk soon. Thank you, sir. Greg Rankstraw from the Indiana Sports Network. Make sure you're giving them a follow. Let's see. We've got to take a break. Lots more coming up here on Indiana Sports Speed Radio with Jim Coyle. Keep it locked right here on 98.7 WWZN, the Zone Bloomington Sports Station. Back right after these messages. Welcome back. Jim Coyle with you on this Monday. Glad to be here. Glad to be along. As always, just finished up with our friend Greg Rakestraw from the Indiana Sports Network. Yeah, lots to keep up with there as the All-Stars going on. Indiana, Kentucky All-Stars. Futures game tonight at New Pal. So there you go. You can go check that out. If you are so inclined. Then the remainder of the games this week, seniors and the juniors, or was that going? I can't remember. Well, good thing is it doesn't matter. The great Dustin DePiric from the Indy Star, the Pacers beat writer. And right off the bat, let's just our man throwing some shade at the Knicks fans. But yes, Tyrese Halliburton. picking on the celebrity fans as they get to come out. I guess, man, I can't even think of his name now. Reggie and
Spike Lee.
Spike Lee, yeah. Mm. I still love those old Spike Lee and Michael commercials. Mm-hmm. Marv Blackman.
Yeah.
Just some great characters created. Back in the day, Maul. What was Maul? What's her name? Is that UNLV player?
Was that Larry Johnson, Grandmama? Yes. Yeah. No, Nike was good in the day. Yeah, Nike was Nike was really good at those in the day. I miss what Ty said. I will say this. I mean, it's fun that there's the back and forth. Like there is, you know, you're like basically you have two like celebrity driven fan bases, if you will. That basically, like, anytime there's a game, you can, you know, go on courtside and see somebody famous. You know, basically, it's the Lakers and it's the Knicks. And the Knicks celebrity fans are way more into it than the Lakers celebrity fans by a lot. Like, it's dramatic. They, like, if you're a Knicks celebrity fan, you are living and dying. Ben Stiller is living and dying on this. Tim Chalamet is living and dying on this. Tracy Morgan's living and dying.
How old is Tim Chalamet? 13, 14 now? How can he be living and dying? No,
just find out he's like. He's probably 35, right? Like, I mean, he's a little
bit. Get out of here.
We're old. Like, you forget, man, how quick this is moving.
You're not lying about
that. He's 30. Okay.
Wow, that still shocks me.
I know. Yeah. No, I mean, he's been around longer than you think. They've all been around longer than you think because we've been around longer.
That's an unfortunate thing. Yes.
Yeah.
The latter part that bothers me.
Yeah. The numbers add up fast. And I'm like, I'm kind of, you know, like it's from a non-celebrity thing. I'm just thinking of like, I mean, like I covered Michael Early as a college baseball player. Like he's the head coach of Texas A&M now. And like, they're, you know, playing for the Supers tonight. against USC. So, you know, like I watched that guy play college baseball and, you know, now he's managing college baseball and it's moving fast. But anyway, the point of the matter that I was trying to get at is like, I like Halliburton getting into this, but in fairness, like the Knicks fans are into this. Also, one of my favorite things about like watching a Knicks, Pacers Knicks series is like when they look for halftime entertainment, like they just look down the row and they say, hey, you want to do it tonight? Like Busta Rhymes is there, like Mary J. Blige is there, the guys from Naughty by Nature are there. Like they just ask them, like, hey, do you want to play? Do you want to come out and just, you know, we'll just hand you the microphone for like 10 minutes. Like they don't have to do anything. Like they don't have to like call some. I mean, like I'm sure they get paid for it, but they're already there. they're already at the game and they can just be like, hey, these are people who are here at every single game. So like, we're just going to pass the microphone to people who are already here and we will outdo everybody else's halftime entertainment.
They just wake Billy Joel up, say, hey, wake up.
Yeah,
wake
exactly.
Up. No. You don't have another set. We just want you to see the game.
Right. Exactly. So, I mean, they are like 100. They are into it. I mean, like, but I like Tyrese giving them hell and I like them giving it back to him. Like, it is recreate. Like, Tyrese is uniquely built for this. And like, he's a different personality, obviously, than Reggie. But his enjoyment of trolling does bring this thing back. And that is a lot of fun. I mean, and we need
that as a people. We need fun and enjoyment in trolling. And because sometimes it gets stupid serious. And not that it's not serious to a degree, but I mean, that stuff, it's let it be what it's supposed to be, man. Have fun.
Yeah. No, and Ty is uniquely built for it. Because he like and because he is a lifetime wrestling fan, like he it just all of his he has all those references, you know, and he has all this ability to get on somebody's nerves or to play heel, to turn all these things. Like that's sort of ingrained in him, is to understand how to like mess with people and do it in a creative, fun, you know, way, basically, and not. Like, it's not over the top ridiculous, but he's very good. You know, even bringing back the choke thing. I mean, the you know, he wore this hoodie after they beat him in game 7 the first year when they beat him in the semis, you know, that had the Reggie choke thing, and that was pretty cool looking. And it was, he has done a good job of playing to that and also not making it stupid. And so that does bring that back. It's not easy to do. You know, sometimes people just get mad. I mean, and like you look at online discourse of things and everything is nasty in this very weird anti-intellectual way, I guess, for lack of a better term. It's like, it's just not funny. And just people just going after each other. And so it's just like to make it, you know, like decent comedy, I guess you got to be pretty good at it. And Tyrese is pretty good at it. And so, and he's playing with a lot of people who also are, you know, and like, if he's going after Ben Stiller and Tracy Morgan, like they can, you know, like they can have a back and forth.
And there's one probably not. I'm not going to go after a comedian, especially one like Tracy Morgan, who may have some stand-up skills. I'm going to stay away from those guys because,
I mean, Tracy's best is being like self-effacing, though. Is like talking, you know, that's the Tracy joke, is to constantly talk like,
we're the playoffs, man. And I'm telling you, the Knicks going to win the playoffs. And I'm going to celebrate with eating Frankfurters.
Yeah. They're hilarious. I mean, Ty did, because he's obviously part of that Young Man in 3 podcast. And he went to Spike Lee's house before the season started and talked to Spike about, and Spike was obviously really excited because he was like, okay, like you're out, Tatum's out, Dame's out, we're in good shape. You know, from the beginning, and it ended up rockier than that. But I mean, he was that, his belief was there, but also he was willing to have, you know, like Ty come into his house and, make fun of him for, he said, you know, you brought that choke back. Like we were done. I was, me and Reggie were cool. And then you brought it back. But it's good. And it, you know, I mean, I think it keeps the Pacers in that conversation.
I love Tracy Morgan, by the way.
What's up?
I said, I love Tracy Morgan, by the way. I think he's hilarious.
He's hysterical. I mean, he plays the same character every time, but I watch that same character every time.
And I've seen Eddie Murphy do – I was actually doing an impression of Eddie Murphy doing that impression of Tracy of Morgan. Him. But, yeah, he's just – I love him. He's just hilarious.
No, those guys are great. So yeah, so Reggie's so Ty's having fun with this, and I'm sure he'll have some level of commentary with the finals coming up. You know that he'll he entered into the fan base talk already. I'm sure he'll have more to say, but it's it makes the whole thing entertaining, and it does. I think it's good for Halliburton to kind of keep the Pacers name on everybody's minds. I think they're. I didn't think this for most of the playoffs, but certainly the way that the Eastern Conference Finals went down, you're like, yeah, this would have been more competitive if Indiana was in it. Cleveland did not do a great job of, keeping it together, basically, in the ECF. That thing got out of hand fast after that 22-point blown lead in game 1. But, you know, I mean, it's so that I think will maintain, you know, some level of like Pacers relevance throughout this offseason and in the next year, when I think everyone's going to just expect them to be right there with New York, and presumably Boston will re-up on some in some scale, and other teams will, you know, make some moves to get to really, you know, reinforce themselves for this thing. But, you know, it is cool that he keeps his voice in this.
You got to, man. Keep hope alive. Keep hope alive.
Yes.
Keep hope alive.
Something like that. Yeah.
Mm. And we get a big difference in flavors for this finals. I mean, the Knicks, who it's not the Knicks who have been trying to get there, but you think more of Cleveland, who was kind of closer these last couple years and kept getting upset mm-hmm. and knocked out, and boom, now it's the Knicks, who haven't been to the finals since 1999. Haven't won since Willis Reed in 1970. I mean, that's a documentary that we watch, Willis hobbling out on the floor. And now everybody, most of us thought the Thunder was going to come back, and now we've got different flavor on the west side of things. So we're going to have a different winner.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's obviously what Wemby did in the west, and just what that Spurs team did in the west is remarkable. You know, obviously it helps that you get lottery luck a couple years. You know, obviously get Wemby number one, get Harper number two, get Castle with top five. I can't remember what number he was. But put those three parts together, and that, you know, that helps you grow up real fast when you get that kind of talent coming in 3 years in a row. And, you know, but I think their veterans have been excellent. Julian Champagne hit some massive shots, you know, certainly in game seven, but throughout that series, you know, you saw De'Aaron Fox had an ugly start to that series and really finish it out well. And they've got some depth. I mean, Keldon Johnson, sixth man of the year, but he's terrific. Just the force that he plays with. They got all their other pieces to come together fast. But I mean, Wemby, I think obviously when he was drafted, you're like, okay, this guy can change the whole thing. And it's happening faster, I think, than we even expected. Like, we knew he was going to be good. We knew he was going to be really, really good. But, you know, I mean, game one for him, 41-24, was incredible. And, you know, he was more, you know, not average, but I mean, like the Thunder had an answer for him the rest of the way to keep him from going utterly crazy. But, you know, he still had 22-8 or whatever in this last one. And he just changes the geometry of the game. You know, when you have somebody in there, like there were just so many occasions when Oklahoma City would drive in the paint, see him turn around, you know, and that's something that's happened throughout the playoff. Yeah. Charles Oakley will be there at every game. You know what I mean? Like the alums are there constantly. Like,
well, I think that goes back to the owner thing, doesn't it?
What's that?
That just goes back to the owner fight.
Yeah. They don't have anything better to do. And, you know, they're having a blast over there. I mean, for every playoff game I've been to in New York, Starks has been there. Oakley's been there. Ewing's been there for most of them. Ewing hasn't been there for all of them, but a lot of them. You know, Marbury, you know, is there. Like, basically every – you know, go both kind of halves of the 90s Knicks, you know, the kind of 93, 94, you know, group, and then kind of the 99 group, you know, have been there. There's, you know, obviously a couple ins and outs in between, and 2000s guys, you know, stuff like that. Those teams have been, you know, those guys show up. Those guys are there like all the time. They went to Cleveland, you know, like for game four. I mean, like the Knicks fans bought up a ton of seats for game four, and the alumni, you know, bought a lot of them themselves, you know, so they're traveling too. You know, those guys are showing up, and in mass, and they're, you know, Larry Johnson's there, like all of those guys, you know, from, you know, again, the early 90s Knicks that were giving it to the Bulls, you know, and kept getting beat. And then, you know, the Knicks team that went to the finals in 99 and the team that went in 94, and lost, like those groups are all there. Basically every, you know, and some guys after that have been pretty standard, you know, there at those games. Everybody's there. But no, I mean, I think, you know, Wemby making a leap, he might have changed the game entirely. You know, and they it was wild to see. I mean, like, Chet Holmgren's a really good player, and Chet Holmgren looks out at Wemby and is just like, I got nothing, and he took two shots in game seven. And, you know, like I kind of felt bad for him the way they were talking about him. I'm like, I don't know what Chet's supposed to do. Like, basically, like, Wemby cancels him out entirely. you know, like Chet's got to like the best that he can do is like just provide resistance on Wemby and get some rebounds and do some boxing out and just get in his way. He had a really big block, a massive block in game one, even though they lost that game. He came through with a huge one. And he had some other, I think, good moments in that series. But, I mean, he just did not have anything in game seven for him at all. And it's just because Wemby's just like Wemby does everything he does but better. And it's just he just wipes him out. And so this guy's just remarkable. And just how fast it's going, because it's not only just the physical gifts, which obviously are incredible, you know, that you could have a guy that's 7'6" and step back, you know, between the legs, fadeaway threes. Like, what are we watching here? But like, his competitive level is through the roof. You know, like, I mean, you've seen that grow real fast. Like, he wants to beat you bad. And that makes him just, the sky is absolutely the limit. I mean, the whole like Shaolin monk thing, I mean, he hit another level mentally fast at 22. And you're like, okay, like, how long is he going to be this good? You know, he's got a chance to be incredible. But on the Knicks side, you know, like, I mean, they're just rolling. I mean, they've won 11 straight by double figures, you know, like this is almost all of them by double figures. And it's just been, you know, like they just ripped through the East, and they are really well built for anybody. Now, you know, like I like Karl Anthony Towns a lot. He's in for it, you know, like he's about to see something different, you know, when it comes to Wemby in the middle. And
that's saying something to Karl Anthony Towns, because he's a vet.
Yeah, he's a big time player. And now, I mean, he's not defensively what Wemby is. You know, I mean, he's just not at that level where Wemby is the best rim protector we may have ever seen. You know, Towns, that's not gonna so much his thing. Now he can drag you out. You know, I mean, like Towns can hit threes over top of you all day. He can back you down. You know, like it's you know, he's not going to post Wemby up that much, you know, as far as like he's not going to score on him that way. He might try, but that's not going to work. But I mean, he can drag him outside and hit threes. He can space it out. He can, you know, you have to cover Towns away from the basket. So, I mean, probably what you're going to see is just him spacing a lot. And just trying to get Wemby away from the basket so somebody else can drive and finish. And so that's probably going to be the best way to try to make that work. But, you know, they've got, you know, like three really, really good, you know, two-way wings in Bridges, Hart, and Anunoby, and that allows them to do a whole lot of stuff. And Brunson's just been terrific. You know, just as a point guard leader, he came through with so many shots. I mean, just absolutely pulled a rabbit out of the hat. In game one of that series, when they were down by 22 with 7 minutes to go, I mean, that's nuts. Like, now, I mean, you know, like obviously the Cavs got a lot to do with that, just folding, you know, for lack of a better term. But Brunson just made shot after shot after shot after shot, and he can do that. And so, you know, he's going to be the best guard on the floor. And so, you know, the Knicks have that, you know, that makes a difference. Having that wing depth, you know, really makes a difference. They're leaning into their bench way more than they did last year. I mean, I thought when, you know, that was a big move. Thibodeau did a great job of building the culture over there and just like raising the level for those guys, but he just refused to play anybody after 6 or 7, you know, on his roster. And, you know, Mike Brown is like, okay, you know, Landry Shamet, you can get some minutes, you know, and Miles McBride, you can play a lot here, and Mitchell Robinson, but also they'll throw Valverde out there and they'll throw, you know, Jordan Clarkson out there from time to time. And you just didn't see Tibbs do stuff like that. And the Pacers were able to wear him out. The Knicks are not going to have that same type of, you know, like, that same type of weakness. And so they're going to have a shot. There's going to be a lot of areas, you know, when you go down 1-7 that they can match up with San Antonio. It's just they don't have a Wemby and nobody else does either.
And now we're in June. The finals are starting. Same as always. Same as it ever was. But right. Is this too late for basketball? Do people want to watch basketball this late now that we're into spring?
Some people don't, but some people don't want to watch it at all. Like, I mean, I have the same frustrations with, not frustrations isn't the word, basically, if you don't like the NBA, you cannot like the NBA, you know, like, I don't care if you're in this position of like the NBA doesn't, if this doesn't grab you, then that's up to you. You know, you can go watch something else. You know, there was great regional baseball this weekend. There's some really good game sevens today, you know, Monday games today. You know, there's regular baseball, there's tennis, there's racing, and you can go have a life too. You know, like, I mean, just not watch sports. Like you have that option, but if you want to watch something, I mean, this is awesome. you know, and it does take a while, obviously, to get through the NBA playoffs, and they drag the finals out because you get from this, you can't really do the playoffs any faster. You know, I mean, they've been doing, you know, like there's been basketball on almost every night, all but like three nights since like mid-April. You know, I mean, it's just been constant. And so, you know, like now you're finally doing stuff where there's days in between for media reasons and public reasons and all that kind of stuff. You know, it's like June 3rd to June 21st, this finals last. But, you know, like this is the sprint. You know, I mean, people complain all year about how the regular season isn't good enough and the guys don't care and this, that, and whatever. And I tell everybody, like, the NBA, like, you have to look at the NBA as guys running a marathon. And because, like, it is, like, you know, if you show up and, you know, have a spot watching a marathon at, like, mile 16, you're not seeing everybody kick. You know, like, you're seeing everybody hold it together and hold pace. And that's what you're doing if you watch a random January NBA game. This is the kick, you know, like, and they've been kicking since April. And this stuff's fantastic, you know. And if, like, if you don't want to watch this, if you don't want to watch this in June, like, you're missing something. Like, this year, like, you could be missing the next great player win his first one, you know. Or you could be missing the Knicks win a title. And that hasn't happened since 99. And so it's like, if you hate the Knicks, maybe, you know, you watch it to root against them because you hate New York for all possible things. And I get it. But it's just, you know, it's late and it does drag you out there. And I feel like even it just as a fan, partially because I feel, you know, kind of like an obligation to watch the playoffs when I'm covering the NBA, you know, like I've had a game on every, like, you know, almost every single night for, you know, 2 months. And, you know, I'm sure my wife is going to be like, okay, we can not watch an NBA game tonight for once. But, you know, like it's phenomenal basketball. It's phenomenal drama. I mean, like, Thunder Spurs was incredible. You know, I mean, game one, Thunder Spurs was one of the best games I've ever seen. You know, like it's great drama. It's great stuff. Like, you're seeing the next great chapter of the NBA open up right now, you know, and it's just, so it's like, if, you know, it's worth it to find somewhere seven in these next 24, 25 days. Like, if you care about basketball, like, watch this, it's going to be wild.
Yeah, and it's great that I mentioned earlier that it's two different teams. And not only that, it's on one side, it's a team that has had tons of success recently with Pop winning, what, he went five?
Yeah, about that. Yeah, I mean, like, it's a whole new version of this. You know, obviously, they you know, went, hit rock bottom, and then started over. You know, obviously the Duncan era, and what they went with, so it was what? It was 99-05? I don't know. It was a bunch. Yeah. Ananobi's been fantastic. Ananobi just gives them so much. His ability, I mean, he gives them the ability, like he can take on a point guard if you want, but he can take a four, you know, like really, you know, give problems to a power forward. And so you've got a lot of decisions to make with Ananobi, Hart, and Bridges. If you're the Knicks, you're like, okay, like how do you take Castle, Fox, Vassell, Champagne? Like, how do you pick those four out? You know, like, what do you do? Brunson, you know, who do you try to hide Brunson on? You know, because I mean, he's obviously little, and so he's not the best defender. But you have Hart, Bridges, and Ananobi, who are three really good defenders. What do you do with each of those guys? Do you put Brunson on Champagne because he's a guy that's just going to shoot? You know, or do you put him on somebody smaller like Fox? You know, that's kind of like equal to him, but you know, like generally you would want somebody better to guard Fox. You know, do you put Hart or Bridges on them? Who do you put on Castle? Who do you put on Vassell? Like, it's, they got tough decision to make as far as those wings concerned, but Ananobi gives you options, you know, like guard your bigger guys. He can guard your smaller guys, you know, just plays with a ton of length, and he's shooting it really well and scoring it really well. And he's been excellent lately. So, you know, that's it. He's been fantastic. I mean, he's definitely, you know, the Ananobi addition years ago was one of the biggest ones that turned the Knicks into a real championship contender. And so, you know, that's that big on an XIU guy to be, you know, he's probably the most successful current XIU guy in the league right now. and he's just had a fantastic career. Am I forgetting somebody?
Nope.
Yep.
Didn't list me, but I'm used to that. Someone asked, how's Maxine doing?
She's good. She's outside running around. She's being loud. Hey, so whatever she's got problems with right now, she's got are outside of these walls, so that's good.
That's what she's supposed to do. And if I didn't mention it last week, I can't remember. There's been so much going on. I probably did. I got to meet Dylan's great wife, or Dustin's great wife. But he was talking at the time, and I said, I know your husband and I know Maxine. That's how I was able to introduce myself.
Indeed.
To her. Yeah. I said, Maxine's famous, man. Maxine's got fans.
She's MJ, my wife, is very, very proud of this also. She was always hoping that Maxine would have some level of sports media fame. And so she does enjoy it that Maxine gets to, you know, that she's got a following, basically. And she's got she gets her airtime for this.
So, I'm gonna have to get Maxine her own shirt, something, some merch. Maxine merch.
We need some Maxine merch. Yeah,
Maxine merch. I'm Maxine. I'm a star, or I do radio, or
I think our thing was Maxine has thoughts. I think that was our that was our working.
I'm Maxine, and I have thoughts.
Yeah,
but yeah, star of Maxine.
Yeah.
Maxine has thoughts. Yep. Love it.
Yeah. Star of the Monday morning hour is Maxine coming on.
Much bigger star than I could ever dream of being, I assure you. So besides checking out the NBA finals, what were you into this past weekend?
I was watching college regionals. I mean, I had other stuff going on, you know, bouncing around and just, you know, being – not working that much. I mean, the Pacers had draft workouts last week, so we did some of that stuff, even though they don't have a draft pick. But baseball regionals was interesting, I thought. You know, UCLA goes down after absolutely dominating all year long. I mean, I think, you know, really gave the Big Ten the best chance to go football, men's basketball, women's basketball, baseball, in terms of champions this year. You know, Big Ten will still have teams moving onward. Oregon won that regional last night. USC fought their way back to get into a game 7 tonight with A&M. Tough one for UCLA. They had a couple one-run losses to St. Mary's out west, and so they're eliminated. I can't remember. It's like the fourth time in the last 6 or 7 years that the number one overall seed has been eliminated in the first weekend. So that's kind of a tough deal for those guys. But, you know, some other fun baseball this week, I thought. I'm trying to think there was an interesting one. Ole Miss won in a walk-off last night. I don't know. Intriguing stuff there in terms of who's moving on. But, Pacers had draft workouts last week. Except they don't have a pick, but they've got a lot of things that they can do. They brought Peter Suter in from Carmel. They brought
DeVries was in, I know, last week or whatever.
Yeah, so that's, you know, they don't do those on the weekends, but they do one Thursday, Friday, and I'm sure they'll have some this week. I haven't looked at my email to see if there's not one today, but they're going to do some of those stuff because it still makes a lot of sense for them. They've got to fill out things and, you know, I mean, I think see if they have any desire to trade in to get like a second round pick. I mean, obviously, no one's going to, you know, I don't think they need a first round pick bad enough. They're certainly not going to get back in their top four, and they would have to move guys that they don't really want to move. But, you know, there is, I think, some level of value to them looking at some of these guys and seeing, you know, also for the future, you want to get to know as many of these guys as possible, so that in the future, if you've got a move that you can possibly make that, you kind of know who you're dealing with. And so, that was sort of interesting to see those guys. Obviously, we don't get to see them actually work out. You know, they do those behind closed doors, but they let all of them talk to the media. And so we got a sense of just who they're looking at, what level of player they can get in for a workout considering they don't have a pick.
Dustin DePerrick with us right now. We've got to take a pause for the cause. Glad to have you with us on this Monday. Hope you're enjoying things out there. It's this great spring weather. We've had such a muted spring, but yeah. We're getting some days right now, Dustin.
We are. No, it's been really sunny, really nice, you know, and not super hot yet, which has been pretty good. You're hitting around
the Maxine just said, is that the official word from Maxine?
It is. I think I speak for her. I mean, she might have more specific thoughts.
Press release.
But yeah, I mean, she's, you know, like it's you know, warmer at night. She decided she wanted to just go run around at 2 a.m, you know, yesterday. Had a few thoughts she wanted to express to the rest of the neighborhood, and then
research. She's out doing research.
Yeah, exactly. And then she just sat on the patio for a while. She was like, "This is great. I'm up for this." So
the great Dustin Epirik with us. More coming up. Glad to have you along. Back with all that and more right after these messages. Welcome back. Indiana Sports Beat Radio on this Monday. Hope you had a great weekend. I had a relaxing one. Didn't do a ton for a first time in quite some time, but that doesn't stay that way long, or back on the road again this weekend. And Dustin Epirik from the Indy Star, Pacers beat writer, keeping up with the NBA Finals. If they have reached that point now, and when's the first game?
Wednesday
night. All right. Let's see. I will guess that is in San Antonio.
Yes, it is. So it's Wednesday, Friday in San Antonio. Then it is Monday. Where are we? I'm looking at this. Yeah. It's Monday, Wednesday in New York. Then the following Saturday in San Antonio for game 5. Then Tuesday is game 6, June 16th. And when's the last one here? Probably Thursday, June 18th. Friday, June 19th, game 7.
What if the Knicks got swept? That would just, oh boy, you would have talked about wailing and gnashing of teeth, baby.
Yes, there would. Yes, it would be brutal. I think they're happy. I mean, you know, they're happy to be in. It's been, you know.
Yeah, but that lasts until their ball tips off.
Yeah, it will. I mean, they'll be very bothered if they go down in 7 or go down in 4. I don't think they'll go down in 4. I think they're going to find a way to get one. You know, I think they'll make this at least reasonably interesting. I mean, I think the Spurs will win it just because they, you know, nobody has a Wemby. And I think Wemby sees the, you know, like he's got it in his sights. And I have a hard time just imagining that they're going to be able to turn him away. But that's, you know, like, I mean, I think the Knicks have enough in them that they'll find a way to get one. And they're going to find a way to, you know, like just come up with some solutions. And, you know, I think then the Spurs will, you know, retaliate, and they've got excellent coaching staff. I mean, their head assistant just got the Magic job, you know? And so like, they've got that's a smart group of, you know, people over there. And they did a great job of adjusting from game to game. I think Mark Daniel from Oklahoma City is one of the best coaches in the league as far as, you know, game to game adjustment. I really just saw that in, you know, in the Pacers series, you know, and Carlisle did a good job of playing off of him. You know, they were both like, okay, like you do this, I'll do that. You do this, I'll do that. And for the Spurs to, you know, kind of like outwit them really says something. So they're well built for that. But I mean, somewhere in there, I think the Knicks are going to come up with something, basically just because they have all these pieces that they can move around, and guys that they can, you know, guys that they can deploy in different ways. And so I think that gives them enough to win a couple games. You know, just again, the veteran leadership that they've got over there, you know, they haven't been in this event yet, but neither have the Spurs. And so, you know, they've played more big games so far. You know, basically, obviously, the fact that the Thunder are here means that they've played just as big of ones. But I mean, you know, the Knicks are, you know, several years into playing this level of playoffs, you know, getting to at least the conference semifinals, you know, winning some games and making it, you know, making it difficult. And, you know, Brunson's terrific. And so I think just he's going to have a night where he goes off. And so I think that's going to be enough to win the Knicks at least one game. I think the Spurs win it. I mean, I guess the Spurs win it in 6. But, you know, like it could go a different way. You know, I hope just for the good of the game that it's, you know, that it's not a 4-game blowout. You know, I don't think it will be, but I hope it isn't.
Yeah, I think we all do. No matter what sport it is, nobody wants to see a sweep. make it exciting, interesting. Interesting is the biggest thing. It doesn't matter if we're talking about the NBA finals, a car race. Baseball, nobody wants to see blowouts.
Right.
But we can't control that. And sometimes that happens, not usually at this level. That's the great things. Last year, NBA finals with a Thunder team that was favored the whole time. But this not only went seven games, but who knows if Tyrese does not get injured, how close that actually would have went.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. You'll never know. I mean, I think James Johnson was on a podcast saying he still believes that, you know, Ty would have won it if he doesn't tear his Achilles. I mean, I think, you know, I obviously look at it in a different way because I always feel like that if he didn't do it on that play, he was going to do it on another play, you know, because I think he kind of got comfortable with that thing. You know, it's like it didn't come out of nowhere. I mean, like he did have a calf strain, you know, and you knew for days that that it was a risk. And so you know, like you have to imagine a scenario where he never strained the calf in the first place. And he was never in a position where the thing was weakened. And so I think it was almost like the better he played, the more at risk he was. You know, the more he played free, the more at risk, the more chance there was that it was going to go. And you know, so it's hard to like remove that reality from the conversation. People are like, well, if he would have just stayed healthy, I'm like, but like, that's a bigger ask than you think, because he was playing on a bad calf and you know, like that, he was at risk that whole game. If he was going to play another 30 minutes, you know, like that could have happened at any time. You know, because it was that, you know, like it wasn't freak. It didn't come out of nowhere. And so, you know, he played real careful in game six and he was very cognizant of it. And I think in game seven, he kind of felt a lot better. And I think that was sort of what, in a way that was what doomed him, was because he didn't notice it and was like, I'm just going to let loose. I'm just going to go all out for this. This is game seven. I'm not going to play careful. And I get it, you know, like, I mean, I think if you're in position and you have that feeling like, okay, like this isn't bothering me, I'm past it. But I think that's like, I think a calf can, you know, lull you into a false sense of security. And you believe that it's not a problem anymore when it still is. And, you know, it's still the muscles, the tendons weakened. And if you put too much stress on it, it can snap, and that's what happened. And so for as much as I think people are like, well, imagine if he didn't get hurt. I'm just like, also like, but what, you know, the way that calf was, it was like, if he didn't get hurt on that play, he could have got hurt on another play, you know, and it could have been 5 minutes later. It could have been 10 minutes later. You know, it would have been hard for him to make it playing the way he was playing without it going bad on him.
And nobody wants to see that.
No, it was not fun. That was an utterly brutal thing to see just as a human, you know, watching that way, basically when he goes down. So that was rough.
How's your baseball team doing?
Well, they swept the Twins this weekend. So, you know, the Central remains utterly deadlocked, and a total mess, which could make for a real fun summer that everybody is, you know, everybody's over 500 still.
I forget. You're the Pirates, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I like, again, I hesitate to call myself a fan at this point because I've covered them. But if we're asking about who I grew up watching, you know, it's the Pirates.
How crazy is this division? In good shape.
What's up?
How crazy is the NL Central?
It's nuts. It's nuts.
I mean, I was talking about it earlier. Mm-hmm. I know we're not halfway, but we're a third of the way through the season, and every team has a winning record in the division. Yeah. I don't know what the deepest into a season that has occurred, but it's a little unusual for even the Reds. They're hanging on with the two games over 500, 30 and 28, and they've gone 6-4 in their last 10. But the Cubs, they're still trying to make up for that 10-game skid. Then the Cardinals, they're 3-7 in their last 10. But the Pirates, they went 6-4 in their last 10. Unfortunately, Milwaukee has gone 7-3, not giving up any room.
Yeah. Yeah, no. I mean, it's going to be it's been remarkable just how it's been. I mean, I think like also like the Cubs had a long enough winning streak earlier that they bought him out for what 10, 11 in a row, and they're still four games under over 500. You know, I think they got right in that Pirates series. You know, basically they you know, at least got going again, where they lost two, the first two in that series, and then they came back and won the last two as a four game set in the middle of the week. And that's a talented team. I mean, they've got no business, you know, they had no business losing 10 in a row, but they had already, you know, they'd won. I think they're one of, I don't know how long it had been since a team had won, like, had won 10 in a row or had like multiple stretches where they'd won 10 in a row and also lost 10 in a row in the same season. So like that's been wild. And Milwaukee's just been steady. Milwaukee's been steady for how long? Mazeroski is making his, you know, leap to being an everyday, or not being an every fifth day guy. And he's going to be an all-star. And he's been terrific. You know, St. Louis, after, you know, they went and sort of hit their rock bottom, you know, has really stepped up, and like Jordan Walker's an MVP candidate. He's been terrific. Cincinnati's played really well. But I mean, the Pirates did a good job of going to getting some pieces, you know, just turning what was a horrendous offense, into something that could really, you know, put some runs on the board. I mean, they had I think it was a 7-1 lead once, like after the second inning in in Saturday's game, blew that lead entirely and end up winning 8-7. You know, and that's something that a year ago that never happens. You know, yesterday they got a great start from Braxton Ashcraft. They got 9 runs, you know, on Sunday. They won in a walk-off on Friday. So they've got the ability to play, you know, to hang in there that they haven't had in a while. And so, you know, obviously the tough part is on either the other two divisions aren't as strong top to bottom, but you got Atlanta that's 40-20, and you've got the Dodgers who are 38-21. So whoever comes out of the Central is, you know, like is dealing with two, you know, juggernaut looking teams right now. So if you're looking down the road at playoffs, as deep as the Central is, it's going to be tough for either one of anybody in that division to end up in the NLCS. But, you know, like there are a lot of competitive teams that are going to have a crack at it to get in. And it might be a situation where it's, you know, it's the Braves and it's the Dodgers and then it's everybody else coming out of the Central. That's possible. You know, I mean, San Diego is still part of that discussion. Washington's growing up a lot. I think Philly has shaken off their bad start. You know, Don Mattingly, I think, has done a really good job since he's taken over that gig. You know, they got rolling again. Schwarber, I think, is, you know, Schwarber's going to make an MVP case now. And so, you know, like there's it National League looks, you know, looks a lot of fun, a lot of good storylines coming out of there, but the Central in particular could go any direction, and you know, all those teams are pretty good, none of them are spectacular. So they're going to, you know, like they're going to be fighting all year. At some point, someone's going to drop off and go under 500, but I don't think the whole division is going to make it the whole year over 500. But whoever falls off is going to be close. You know, like I think you could have, you know, 4 winning teams out of that division, and whoever's fifth is going to be like win like 75 games. You know, I think that's kind of where the Central ends up. So, you know, that's got a chance to be pretty fun.
Is Kyle Schwarber quietly building a Hall of Fame career?
Yeah, I don't know if you call it quiet. I don't know if you call it quiet. Yeah, I mean, like he's getting there. You know, I mean, like he, you know, obviously he's had a resurgence since, I mean, he had that really bad year in 2020, and you know, just that shortened season, like he didn't have much, and then it was like, okay, well, you know, the Cubs move on in that case, and so he had to kind of, you know, work his way back. But I mean, the numbers, you know, like 22-26, or you know, 22-25. 46, 47, 38, 56, you know, massive numbers. RBIs, 94, 104, 104, 132. You know, OPS, 827, 817, 851, 928. You know, right now, he's slugging 593, you know, 347 OPS, or on-base percentage, 940 OPS. You know, 22 home runs leading the league. 20 home runs, you know, it's 56 games in. So you still got, you know, close to 2/3 of a season left. I mean, he's going to get, you know, he's going to get 40 with ease. So you're going to be looking at, you know, 5 straight years of 35 or better. You know, he's got a World Series ring. He's been to another, he's been on really competitive teams, you know, like everybody loves him. He's got, you know, he's got 362 home runs, you know, so far career wise, you know, 851 career OPS. I mean, I think, if he keeps on this stretch, if you get 3 more years out of this level of Kyle Schwarber, I think you'd be, I don't think you let him out. Cause I mean, like 3 more years of this, you know, I mean, like he like 500's in like he's got a shot at 500. and nobody gets left out if you hit 500, basically, unless you've got a major, and you know, unless you've got a major PED charge, you can't hit 500 and get left out, you know. So, and I don't think that's a problem with Kyle. He's just always been Kyle. So, yeah, I think he's making a heck of a charge at this point in his career. I mean, I think. It would go a long way if he gets an MVP, and you know, obviously it's hard to do that when Shohei Ohtani's in your league. But you know, I mean, I think he's got a chance at stacking together. If he can have a few more years like this, he can stack together some MVP. You know, like get some MVP votes. I think where you start looking at him different. I mean, yeah, last year he finished second, 56 bombs on 132 RBIs. It's just a crazy, crazy season. Played all 162. So, you know, yeah, I think Schwarber's making a case. I don't think he's in. I don't think he's safe if he retires tomorrow. But, you know, like if he turns this into at least a 40 home run season, which he's well on track to do, if he turns this into a 50 home run season, you know, gets another next year where he gets 30 or 40, another year after that where he gets 30 or 40, you know, he's going to get close to this position where it's hard to leave him out.
We'll keep track. The great Dustin Napierik, Pacers beat writer from the Indy Star. Make sure you're giving him a follow. Appreciate you, my friend.
Absolutely. Thanks as always, Jim.
Peace to Maxine as well.
Yeah, she's hanging out on the couch.
All right, Maxine. Good to see you. All right. Yeah. Hey, we've got to take a quick break. Back with more Indiana Sports Beat Radio right after these messages. Welcome back, Indiana Sports Beat Radio, on this Monday. Glad to have been here on this beautiful day. Glad to have had you along, as always. Back tomorrow to do this again. We will have Campbell's Corner. JD will be back. And, of course, Mike DeCourcy. And we'll get you caught up on everything that continues to flow in the wide, wide world of sports. Kind of a quiet week. Indiana football has team camps this week, so there will be some recruiting stuff going on, but that of a different sort. But we'll keep you updated on all that as well. And any more new commitments all the way around, we'll talk more about how college sports is going to get itself uprighted and move forward, because it's kind of hard to do that when you don't have a direction and when everybody's going in a different direction at the same time. Very, very difficult to drive a car. It's like having a car with four wheels that are not pointed in the same direction and none of them pointed in the same direction. That's kind of what things are like at the moment. But hey, what else can we do, right? Hang on and watch it, how it turns and turns, and keep getting off of this merry-go-round. But back tomorrow to do it all again. Can't wait until then. Looking forward to it. I'm Jim Coyle. Go out, have yourself a great day. Until then, keep it locked right here on 98.7 WWZN, The Zone, Bloomington Sports Station, and for Glass in the Afternoon. Until tomorrow, I'm Jim Coyle. I will see you on the radio.
Thanks for listening to Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Be sure to subscribe to our YouTube page for more clips and team coverage of Indiana basketball, football, and more. You can also find full episodes and tons of other content on thehoosier.com. We'll see you next time for another edition of Indiana Sports Beat Radio.